Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Senator Bernie Sanders' rise was one of the most remarkable stories in the modern history of U.S. presidential elections. Sanders' focus on deep economic discontent, rising college tuition debt, the lack of affordable health care, income and wealth inequality, and the plight of working people galvanized tens of millions of people, including a large number of young voters. His popular message translated to 13 million votes during the primary. Hillary Clinton got 15.5 million votes. Today's guest, Becky Bond, a senior advisor on the Bernie Sanders campaign, says one of the greatest lessons she learned was that a tiny number of staff using pretty basic technology unleashed hundreds of thousands of volunteers who advanced a nationwide movement. She says there's no reason this energy should not continue to grow. Urgent opposition to Donald Trump represents the greatest opportunity for mass participation in politics since the anti-war movement of a half century ago. So what is the future of Bernie Sanders' movement in the Trump era? What can we learn from the campaign's successful strategies to create an inclusive and united front against Donald Trump's agenda? Becky Bond is a veteran organizer and a former senior advisor to Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. She is the co-author of the new book, Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. And Becky joins me here in studio. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Rose.
Welcome to the show. It's great to see you.
It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, there's so much to talk about, and I'm so glad we're having this discussion. I wanted to ask you first off, you were heavily involved in Bernie's campaigns, and he's doing some town halls across the country, still traveling. What's his focus right now?
Well, Bernie's continuing the political revolution. And so I had the privilege to work on Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. And the part of the campaign that I was able to work on with Zach Exley was really, it was a fringe of the campaign, but it turned out to be a really big part of the campaign. And it was all of the supporters across the country that didn't happen to be in one of the early primary states who wanted to help Bernie Sanders be president. And so even from the very beginning of the campaign, before Iowa, before New Hampshire, there were people in every state of the union organizing for Bernie because they believed in his message. And now Bernie's doing the same thing he did during the campaign, which is he's traveling the country and he's organizing people to support the ideas he fought for in the primary for the Democratic presidential nomination. But now he's doing it through his work in the Senate, which is going to be an important bulwark against the worst abuses of the Trump administration. And also, there's a very real and urgent fight to rebuild the Democratic Party and what's going to be the future of that. And he's very, very involved in that fight to rebuild the party, to make sure that there are people involved in that rebuilding of the party that care about racial justice and economic populism and that want to bring the party back to organizing.
There was a lot of controversy, a lot of people questioning whether or not that was the right move to rebuild the Democratic Party and whether that's possible. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we have to do everything right now. I mean, we're deep in a hole. This country has elected a president who has dangerous autocratic tendencies, someone who has threatened to deport millions of our neighbors, someone who doesn't value women as human beings based on his behavior, someone who has a reckless approach to foreign policy. So we're in a really dangerous position when it comes to Trump being in the presidency. So I don't think we can give up on any avenue that we have for change. And, the Democratic Party isn't the only way people are organizing. People are organizing across the country, in their communities, in their states. Our Revolution, which is an organization that came out of the Bernie Sanders campaign, is organizing, and people are getting together in their community. So I think we basically have to fight on every single front, and we can't discount any avenue to change.
It's been kind of shocking, maybe, that I haven't heard much self-introspection from the Democrats themselves, because there's been so much attention on Russia and James Comey. And Nancy Pelosi on Face the Nation a couple of Sundays ago said, "I don't think people want change from the Democratic Party." I mean, from your perspective, working with Bernie Sanders, who's an independent but ran as a Dem, what do you think about the current state of the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for people in places like, the San Francisco Bay Area and across the country where you're listening to this program to understand is don't underestimate how incredibly out of touch the people in Washington, D.C. are. And it doesn't mean that they're not smart. It doesn't mean that they don't care about some of the same things that we do necessarily, but they're incredibly out of touch. And so I think there are a lot of people that are involved in the Democratic Party and that are involved in federal politics who think we just need to change some things around the edges, who think that the party's not fundamentally broken, but we just made some mistakes along the way. But I think that it's pretty clear to people that don't live in Washington, D.C., and that have been part of the movements that are dealing with climate change, that are looking at income inequality and structural racism, that the country is deeply broken in certain ways, and we need massive change. And you know, it's important to understand that people that work in politics, it's kind of a recession-proof industry, and so when their candidate loses, that doesn't mean they might lose their particular job, but they get another job, and it's not the same as what people outside of these capitals experience. And so I think one of the big problems in this campaign was that national Democrats didn't really understand how bad things are for the American people, and so many places, and they thought that policies like the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, which they had championed, they thought that the American people loved those policies and would vote for them. They thought when they say the economy is growing, that people would resonate with people, and that would make them want to vote for Democrats. But in reality, on the ground, in state after state that I went to, from Kansas to Iowa to Nevada, when you talk to voters and Democratic voters, they say again and again, I'm forced to buy Obamacare, but my deductible is so high I can't go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. So Obamacare doesn't work for me. You haven't solved my problem. Obamacare doesn't work for me. The president says the economy is growing, but everyone I know is doing worse. And the economy is growing, but mostly for the top 1%. So it's not really reflected in people's lives. And so until Democrats face the fact that their policies have to make material differences for the better in the lives of most Americans, not just the top 1%, that they can't go out with these polled averages, you know, and present a rosy picture and expect people to trust them to govern.
You left Credo Mobile to join Bernie's campaign, and Credo is a progressive phone company. When you were there, you did a lot of outreach and activism. Because we're so disconnected from D.C., the stories that I've read about the disconnect between Hillary's people in Brooklyn versus the grassroots activists in Michigan, it seems like there was a massive disconnect there. But working with Bernie's campaign, what did you learn about the sort of elite in Washington, D.C., the people that make these decisions? What other insights can you share with us?
Well, I mean, one of the things that was so amazing about the Bernie Sanders campaign, and again, you know, the Bernie Sanders campaign had this amazing traditional field campaign, the way presidential campaigns tend to be run, where you have a field staff and amazing people that are on the ground with offices and a lot of paid staff in Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada. And the Bernie Sanders campaign ran that campaign. But what the Bernie Sanders campaign also did is it recognized that they had hundreds of thousands of supporters all across the country that wanted to be involved in the campaign, in fact, demanded to be involved in the campaign. And that's why the Bernie Sanders campaign set up this team. It was sort of a group of gopher broker regulars who were true believers in Bernie Sanders' policy platform to come together and try to figure out how can we get people from all over the country involved in this campaign and helping to make Bernie Sanders be the president. And because the campaign had one section of the campaign had this focus, and we were a tiny team, but because so many people eventually got involved, it became a huge part of the campaign and became the way that most supporters actually interface with the campaign. We actually had volunteers from across the country involved in the campaign at a very high levels because they were managing all of the activities that were happening in their community. And so we had this amazing feedback loop from the grassroots because we had so many people involved and we talked to them every day. We didn't just send blast emails out to them, although we did send a lot of emails, but we had Slack teams, which is a sort of a real-time chat tool that's used by businesses for teams to work across space and time. We had Facebook groups. They were writing, documents for us in Google Apps. And so every day we had thousands of touch points about what people were thinking and what was going on. And the Clinton campaign was a much more top-down campaign. Mm. And they relied a lot on consultants. And it's coming clear from a lot of the news articles that they relied a lot on statistical models and algorithms to tell them where to put resources, where to go, where the people were. And some of the assumptions clearly in those models were wrong. And the polling was wrong based on what they had. So because they didn't have as many people involved in the campaign, somehow that essential feedback loop that you get when you have a mass participation movement – from leadership to the people that are making the campaign. We had that on Bernie, but we don't have that on a lot of Democratic campaigns.
There was a piece in Politico that was pretty damning called How Clinton Lost Michigan and Blew the Election. Across battlegrounds, Democrats blame headquarters, stubborn commitment to a one-size-fits-all strategy. Virgie Rollins, a DNC member and longtime political hand in Michigan, said, quote, "I've never seen a campaign like this." She described months of failed attempts to get attention to the collapse she was watching unfold in slow motion among women and African-American millennials. She said that requests into Brooklyn, Hillary Clinton's campaign headquarters, for surrogates to come talk to her group were never answered. When they held their events anyway, they got no response to requests for a little money to help cover costs. I mean, people in this article were quoted as saying they couldn't even get signs for their lawns. I mean, it was just they would go to these campaign headquarters and there was no one there. And then they asked people, come speak, and they were just – they felt like the activists were sort of treated with disrespect from the headquarters.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a structural problem. And I like to say, I mean, there were some places where the Clinton campaign had wonderful, you know, volunteers, you know, working out of an office. And so that was not the experience everywhere. And I'm sure there's some volunteers here who had a good experience with the Clinton campaign. But this is why Zach Exley and I wrote the book, Rules for Revolutionaries, about how big organizing can change everything, because there has been this, over the past few decades, there's been this trend in how Democratic campaigns are run. And instead of having a campaign where you get as many people involved as possible, where you try and win a majority of the people by talking to as many people as possible, getting as many volunteers as possible to go knock on doors and have these personal interactions with voters, it's really changed to start out with a consultant, often, you know, an expensive consultant, that does a lot of work with voter file data, so the list of people that are likely to vote and what you think that they believe in based on what magazines they subscribe to and any number of attributes. And they try and figure out how few people one can talk to, right, as opposed to how can we talk to as many people as possible and bring the majority over to our message. And so over the years, what this has done is campaigns have started to get formed around actually not having people participate, because you can imagine it's much easier to manage a data set in a media buy than it is a bunch of messy volunteers coming into the office and a bunch of people, you know, maybe not agreeing with how you're doing things, telling you the message is wrong, why aren't we doing this, and that sort of thing. And so we have these campaigns that are actually focused around, like, not including people, right, and not including voters. And so the Clinton campaign is a really tragic example of this. I think we're finding out as more information comes out, right, what are the tragic results of this when you get when the data people actually get some things really, really wrong. But it's a trend. And one of the things that Zach and I wanted to do writing this book was to put out the playbook of what we learned on the Bernie campaign, which is about, you know, how do we actually go back to a mass participation form of politics where we get a lot of people involved, not just to turn out and vote, but actually to run the campaign, right? And how do we create that feedback loop and that movement participation in political campaigns or social justice issue campaigns?
Right. And so if people feel like they have a stake in the campaign.
That's right.
Because in the book, you write that campaign robocalls make a difference only to the consultants who earn money making them. Direct mail doesn't have much of an effect. Is that right?
In most races, certainly in federal races.
Because here in San Francisco, I mean, we were voting on, what, 42 measures altogether at the state and local level, and we were just inundated. We had so many calls over the last months from people who said, I'm so tired of getting all of this paper.
Yeah, I mean, if you compare a knock on the door to a mailer, you know, the mailer has very, 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 very little effect. That's right.
And you write that when you look at actual campaign results, the gold standard for moving voters in election is a volunteer having a conversation with a voter on the doorstep or on the telephone.
That's right. There's an increasing body of work in political science. A lot of it's actually being pioneered out here in the San Francisco Bay Area that shows us that when you want to move voters to the polls, that the most effective thing you can do is have an interaction with them over the most personal as possible vehicle. And the most personal vehicle for that kind of interaction is in person, like a person talking to a person, whether that's at the door or that's on the phone. And what's so amazing about that is if you actually believe in little d democracy and that people need to be involved to take back their country, it's a perfect it's a very virtuous cycle. You get volunteers involved in the campaign talking to voters, and that actually happens to be the most effective way to move people to the polls and to move people to your message.
it's so easy to move on from what happened a month ago. Talk a little bit about what Bernie actually accomplished, because when you think about the, what, over $228 million, is that right, that he managed to raise from small donations, about $27 each, at a time when so much of the attention was on Donald Trump 24/7, and then the Washington Post had all of those op-eds in one day that were anti-Bernie, and he had a really hard time getting coverage until the very end. When you look back, Becky, at what was actually accomplished, how do you analyze it?
It was amazing, and I want to say thank you to everyone that's listening to the show that was part of the Bernie movement, because you really made a difference. And not only do we fund this campaign without Bernie having to go and spend all this time with, you know, really, really wealthy people begging for money, not only did you fund the movement, we had, it's very well known that the average donation was $27, but it's not as well known that the average age of a donor was 28 years old.
Wow.
And so we actually got a lot of people in politics who hadn't been involved before. And these people, you know, as part of the campaign that I worked on, the team that I worked on, we sent over 8 million individually sent text messages to voters and to volunteers, and made over 80 million phone calls to voters, held over 100,000 volunteer-led events. And this is an amazing accomplishment. And the great thing about this is not only did it help move Bernie Sanders from 3% name recognition to achieving 46% of all the delegates at the Democratic National Convention, but it really moved the Clinton campaign in terms of what policies they thought it was possible to get the American people to support. And now, you know, the people that supported Bernie Sanders and a lot of the people that supported the Clinton campaign, they're not going home, and they're going to stay involved in the fight against Trump. And what we need to do is we need to build on all the organizing that we did, all of the groups of people that worked on the Bernie Sanders campaign. They're still meeting. I'll tell you, I got a Facebook message today, and this is part of the story, is the consumer technology that's available today that's free or low cost that allows this organizing to happen. I got a Facebook message today from someone who I used to work with, but I don't know very well, but I'm connected to on Facebook, and she had been to a community meeting of former Bernie volunteers in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and she had met someone named Judy Schumacher, who was a really amazing volunteer on the Bernie campaign, who had brought the book that Zach and I wrote to the meeting, was trying to urge people to read it and so that they could organize together with it. And Judy Schumacher was this great. She was a process engineer for a bank, and she was involved in one of the first things that we set up, which was the email help desk on Bernie Sanders, which answered hundreds of thousands of emails over the course of the campaign. And one of the things that she presented at the meeting was that, you know, that the Bernie campaign asks people to do something big to win something big, which we talk about as very important to this kind of organizing in our book. And she said that she'd been asked to give small amounts of money and make a couple phone calls for the Clinton campaign. But what really made a difference for her was that she was allowed to get involved with her full self and do big things, right, for the campaign. And that changed everything. And now she's involved in organizing locally with the same people she was involved with and new people who are coming out because of Trump. And so I think it's this approach to organizing, and this is what the Bernie Sanders campaign leads behind, is a new approach that is going to endure and that's going to keep fighting and not go home and not go away once the presidential campaign is over.
Becky Bond is a veteran organizer and a former senior advisor to Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. She is co-author with Zach Exley of the book Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. What questions or comments do you have for Becky if you were a Bernie supporter? When you look back at the campaign, what really stands out for you? What did you learn? What worked? What didn't work? And how are you staying active? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And even if you didn't support Bernie Sanders, what are your thoughts about the movement that was created around this campaign? He got 13 million votes. Hillary got 15.5 million. He ended up winning in Michigan. I mean, this was a major, major upset. So what are your thoughts about that? Becky, when you look back at the campaign, what did you learn? I mean, if you could do something different today, what would that be?
Well, you know, it was a really humbling experience, and I, you know, the amount of talent that's out there in the grassroots, people who are just waiting to be asked to do something big. And it's something that, you know, that organizers, I think, don't always know how to tap into in ways that actually allow people to achieve their whole potential. And one of the things I really learned on the campaign was to treat volunteers who are willing to do a lot of work, who bring talent and connection in their communities, to treat them as peers and work together, and how much more work that we can do when we take that approach. I'd never been on a campaign where we really treated the volunteers as part of the staff. Mm. And we did this out of necessity because, you know, when we started, Bernie had 3% name recognition. And we knew it was going to take and the Clinton campaign had all the endorsements. They had all the donors. They had all the media. They seemingly had everything. They had cleared the field. They seemingly had everything locked up. And so we knew it would take something so huge to make it possible for. And we were in it. You know, it wasn't a message campaign for us. It was we were in it to help Bernie win the nomination. And so to win, it would have to be so huge. And then we knew we would never be able to hire a staff big enough to turn enough people out. So we had to use the volunteers to create this huge nationwide staff that was distributed across the country. And then a lot of the techniques that we developed, which can be used in a campus-wide campaign or a city-wide campaign, you know, or a national campaign, was about how do we actually get as many people involved, get volunteers managing at all levels so that we could actually scale participation to a level where we would actually win.
At 3% name recognition, I mean, you had to do a heck of a lot of work in a short amount of time.
Well, you know, it was amazing because basically when people heard Bernie's, like the best asset that the campaign had was Bernie's message. And it was really important because Bernie talked about all of the issues, right? And so he potentially spoke to everyone. He tried to speak to everyone in the country, not just a small slice of the country. And then the second best thing that we had on the campaign was Bernie as the messenger. He was someone that people believed because he'd been saying this for 30 years. And I'd be on college campuses and talking to 19-year-olds who were basically like quitting school just to volunteer for Bernie. It's like, why are you doing it? And just like, I believe that Bernie will actually take action on these things that need to happen because he's been saying it for 30 years, right? And so we had Bernie as the authentic messenger. But then what we had is we had enough amazing support across the country. And we would have these public meetings and we would just say, if we could get enough people who agreed with Bernie on the issues to get involved in the campaign, we could win. And they felt that viscerally, that was actually possible. Mm.
I laugh because Bernie is he 72, 74? He's 75. I mean,
you know, it's
kind of amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people think that the American people are swayed by celebrity or by charisma, but in reality, if you actually put forward a platform that has solutions as radical as the problems that we face, a lot of people come out of the woodwork. And that's what's so amazing about the Bernie movement is that they came to the campaign because they agreed with Bernie's political analysis, and no one had spoken to that before. Like, let's stop deporting all of the children, right, that come from Central America. Let's break up the banks. Right. He was talking about the radical solution. Let's actually keep fossil fuels in the ground and let's actually talk about the solutions we need, not what the politicians in Washington, D.C. believe is politically feasible. And that actually appealed to so many people who'd never heard that before from a politician. And then they were willing to work for that.
Now, this is a white 75-year-old man who calls himself a Democratic Socialist from Vermont. And he got some criticism for not reaching out to communities of color soon enough. But you point out in your book that your best volunteers were actually working class women of color.
You know, it's really true. I think that people that experienced the campaign mostly on social media or mostly in the mainstream media, there was a lot of attention played to this idea of the campaign was all Bernie bros, right? And that narrative was very effective at erasing the contributions of so many amazing people on the campaign. And, you know, I experienced the campaign by traveling around the country and working with volunteers, helping them build this massive voter contact machine, you know, that contacted millions and millions of voters. And everywhere that I went, you know, the most effective leaders on the ground were almost always working class, you know, women of color who were in an existential fight for their families. You know, I was, you know, it would be a construction worker who understood that if we couldn't have big infrastructure projects, her a Latina construction worker, that her work would go away. Not only that, but she didn't know how her kids were going to be able to afford to go to college, right? And so and this woman, actually one of the people that I encountered in Southern California is this woman named Irma, who's this construction worker, and she was picking me up and driving me somewhere for the campaign at like 4:30 in the morning. It was some crazy thing, and she was doing it before work. And I was asking her, you know, what she thought about the campaign's chances, and she's like, you know what, I know it's a long shot. And she's like, I've never been in a presidential campaign. I've never been in a campaign before, but I'm motivated to work for this, even though he's probably not going to win and it's a long shot, because this is the only thing worth working for, is the person that's actually going to go in there and solve the problems and do the things that need to be done. And that's why I'm spending every bit of my time that I can, because if we don't start to win some of these fights and actually deal with climate, income inequality, structural racism, crushing student debt, then I'm really worried about the future of this country. And I think that young people and working class people of all colors really get how bad things are, and that the only practical solution to where we are right now is actually pretty radical action. And so it's not naivete and it's not idealism. It's a really practical reaction to the place we find ourselves in.
And radical. I mean, you're talking about a $15 minimum wage, health care for all, affordable education. I mean, that's not that radical.
That's right. Yes.
Right?
But it is what we need.
That's where we are right now.
It's what we need to do to solve our problems. Yeah.
Becky Bond is a veteran organizer and former senior advisor to Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign, and she is co-author with Zach Exley of the new book, Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. And you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, or you can tweet us at yourcallradio. In 2017, we're going to need strong, independent media, free of commercial influence. You make that possible at KLW. Please join us as we close our 75th year on the air in the Bay Area. Make your tax-deductible donation at klw.org. And thank you.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will rebroadcast a conversation we had about food waste. 32% of globally produced food goes lost, uneaten, or wasted, and a number of incredible organizations are tackling this problem with serious results. So we'll tell you how you can prevent food waste tomorrow. Friday, it is our last media roundtable of the year, and we did talk a lot about Donald Trump and all of the 24/7 mostly uncritical coverage he got this year. What has the media actually learned from this, and what can we expect next year? That is on Friday. Today, we're joined by Becky Bond, a veteran organizer and former senior advisor to Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. She's co-author of the book, Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Quick question before we go to calls and emails. What did you learn about the media? I should say that you actually got me this job. I met you at an event 12 years ago, and you were producing the show, and then I produced 2 days a week. That was a while back. So you understand how media works. And I've been looking a lot at articles about the $2 billion in free coverage that Trump received, the mostly uncritical coverage he received. What are your thoughts about that when you look back?
I think one of the things that we learned in this campaign is that a democracy does need a strong and independent media to hold on to our democracy, and we may not have that in this country. And I think there's been a lot of talk about the Comey letter and the effect on the Clinton campaign at the end of the general election and some of these things and how that might have affected the campaign. And I feel like, well, if that had actually been contextualized by the media, in ways, and the media had actually been covered the real issues of the race, that the general election might have turned out differently. So I think we're in I think we're in deep trouble in the fact that the mainstream media refused to cover Bernie for much of the campaign had an impact. But But we were lucky that we had a really strong social media network that was able to actually not only get the news out, get Bernie's message out and his full format speeches out, but also was able to connect the people that were responding to those speeches and to Bernie's message to each other and get them organizing. And that's something that the mainstream media can't do. So I think that we need to take back the media, but we also need to recognize that we have to be the media and connect our information flows to organizing.
Do you think that the DNC leaks really did have a major impact?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think that was anything that at least the people that supported Bernie didn't know, that the DNC had its thumb on the scale all along. We always knew it was a long shot, you know, for Bernie, and there were lots of forces that were arrayed against him. And there's all sorts of impediments to voters getting the information they need and actually even just getting to the polls, right? Our democracy is at risk in so many ways, and I think that was actually, to be honest, more of a distraction than anything else. Mm.
I think you raise a really good point that maybe if the media focused on real issues, we could have had a different outcome.
That's right.
Let's hear from some callers. Let's go first to Donna in Redwood City. Hi, Donna. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I wanted to ask how to bring forward an idea for your future organizing. Becky, are you going forward with like right now? I think the country needs to turn its attention to members of Congress, to you know really looking at not only legislation but the influence side of what Congress can do for us as their constituents. And I've been developing some software, and I wondered how do you bring forward new ideas?
Wow, you mean to your members of Congress? Yeah, so that's a really good question. So, I mean, I think, you know, basically, we really need everybody to stand up at this time. We need citizens to stand up. We need our members of Congress to stand up. We need the media to stand up. And so the extent to which, you know, you can get Congress to pay attention to what's actually happening, you know, unfortunately, a lot of what they respond to is like you getting in touch with them in person, right, and showing up at their town halls or making phone calls into their offices or showing up in Washington, D.C. at their district offices. But, you know, clearly what we're doing now is not working. Right. And so anyone who thinks we can do the same thing but just a little bit better and actually change things, this election has proven that that's not true. So I think we need lots of new ideas. And then I think people need to support the new ideas that are promising and that show success. And then we need to scale them up.
It's interesting you say that because Representative Steve Israel, a Democrat from New York, is leaving the House. And he just did a quick video and said, you know what? The phone calls and the emails really don't matter. What you need to do is show up to the office in person and either demand to meet with your representative or give them a letter in person. And I'd never really heard a politician say that before, because every time we do a show, we always say, what can people do? And they say, call your representative or email your representative.
I mean, I think calls actually do make a difference. And I've definitely seen staff take note of that. I think that politicians conveniently, when they don't agree with the message that you're giving you, they say, oh, the calls are, you know what I mean, being manufactured. You know what I mean? And this, they're always changing the bar about what makes a difference. But what really makes a difference is actually when they're afraid they're going to lose their job, right? I mean, the thing that makes the biggest difference is if you primary someone or you let them know that they're not going to have your vote and you actually organize to hold them accountable. So I think that, you know, we do need to call and email them. We do need to show up in their offices and we do need to show up at their town halls. But we also really need to consider if they're not doing the job, you know, someone maybe should run against them or you should support someone to run against them.
What can we do in California? Because, I mean, Nancy Pelosi never debates. Sometimes I'm surprised to see her name on the ballot, thinking, oh, she's up for re-election. I had no idea. You know, they don't really do town halls in California because their seats are so safe.
Well, you know, they do actually. I mean, they politicians actually do town halls, but they often don't publicize them, right? And this is like this huge problem. You have to actually follow them on Twitter, watch their website. They'll announce it right before it happens, right, when they do these. And I understand that when you have someone who's in leadership in a very safe seat that they often don't do. They don't do public appearances, but it is really important that we start letting the politicians know that they work for us. And again, you know, how we challenge that is we organize donors, we organize people to run. I mean, you know, the leadership in Congress that we have, you know, they're in their, a lot of them are in their late 70s, right? And we've seen members of Congress that were thought to be safe get knocked off in primaries. We saw that happen to Mike Honda. You know, this is how Eric Swalwell right. got into Congress. So I think there's an effort that that a bunch of former Bernie volunteers are involved in called the Brand New Congress, and their idea is let's run 400 people for Congress and let's just turn them all over. And if enough of us believe it's possible and get involved to make it possible, it might. So I think we need moonshots like that, people need to run even if it's a long shot. I mean, no one thought Bernie would do as well as he did. And while he didn't win the nomination, he really changed the whole platform of the Democratic Party, and that's a step in the right direction.
Mm. All right. Thank you for calling in, Donna. Let's go next to Mike in Berkeley. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi. I was just wondering what midterm elections are most important. So I think that in 2 years we should be fighting for getting some reasonable people in Congress. But what are the most important or possible wins for Democrats?
Well, that's a really good question. So in 2018, the midterm elections tend to be low turnout elections, right? And so and there's always this conventional wisdom of these are the states that can flip. And these are the congressional districts where we actually have a chance. It's an open seat or we have a weak incumbent and that sort of thing. But I think one of the things that the Tea Party did in 2010 is they took a run at almost all of the seats, including seats that were considered safe. And so you had someone in the Republican leadership like Eric Cantor that lost his seat to a college professor from the radical right wing. So while I think it's important to sort of like come up with a set of seats where we think that resources should go and people should go, that is going to be the D.C. conventional wisdom to identify the seats that can flip. But I think as people who want to see change, we need to start giving these politicians a run for their money, no relief on the map, right, and going after it everywhere. And in particular, getting behind people who come from a regular experience, working class people, people who are high school principals, people who are nurses in their community, people who actually understand what's going on, and start to get people to think about running. So it's not just the seats that we win, but it's the members of Congress that we move through primary. And I think this is a really important concept.
Because of what happened on Election Day, so many people are talking about the Electoral College, about voter suppression, about Bush v. Gore, and the fact that not much has changed since 2000. I was surprised that Bernie really didn't even talk much about voter suppression, about taking mostly black people off of the rolls, the problems at the voting booth. Why aren't those issues getting more attention with Dems?
You know, this comes up every time. You know, I think that, first of all, this work has to be done ahead of time. The decisions that are made that make it hard for people to vote at the polls are often done years before the election or months before the election. And so by the time people realize or pay attention to the election, it's actually too late to change them. And I think that this is a long-term problem that the Democratic Party really needs to address. I think part of the structural issue is that the Congress that we have is elected with the system that we have. Mm-hmm. And so that even as wrong as it is, the fact that we have a racist system that suppresses some people's participation, tends to be low-income people, people of color, students, the elderly, that the people that are elected don't have a lot of motivation to change it because they made it in with the system that we have. And so it's going to take an enormous push. But it also means, as people who get involved in campaigns, it means that we have to make sure that the margins that we win by are big enough to overcome right, this margin of error that could be caused by these things. But I think we absolutely need to pay attention to who we elect as our election officials, from the county clerk to the Secretary of State, but how we demand that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and our courts fix this.
Hmm. All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Mike, and we're going to definitely do shows about all of that. Let's go next to Paul in San Francisco. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Yes, this is Paul in San Francisco. And as I was listening to your call, I'm mystified by the comments that are made. First of all, there's a tremendous disrespect for our next president-elect. You refer to Bernie in glowing terms as his first name, his Christian name. But in terms of Mr. Trump, it's Trump in this very abrupt manner, as though he has done something bad by running on his beliefs and the people who elected him. And the irony is, the person you're speaking is spending all the time with, and she's been telling us about Bernie. Actually, when I was listening to her, Mr. Trump did the very things that she was proclaiming the Democrats should be. He went to the working class people. He went to the people in Pennsylvania, rural Pennsylvania. He went to all of these places that have previously ignored. And the fact of the matter is half of the country voted for Mr. Trump. And the fact of the matter is this, the way you guys talk about it, it's you're some kind of revolutionary gang in San Francisco, and we have no right.
Well, thank you, Paul. Actually, it's 25% of the population. Half the country really didn't vote. But, yeah, all right. What are your thoughts, Becky?
Yeah,
he did go to rural areas.
No, I think that's right. I think, you know, here's what I think is that I think that we have to stop making the assumptions about who's with us and who's not with us, right?
Yeah.
And that too often that Democratic campaigns and that's what I'm speaking about because that's what I worked in, you know what I mean? And that's what the book is about, is that they make a list of constituencies that are seen as traditional base for the party. And then they add them up to get to 50% plus one vote. And I think we have to throw that out the window. And that's one of the things that we talk about with this concept of big organizing is that we have to stop thinking about how few people we can talk to. We have to talk to everybody and find out who's with us, who's never going to be with us, and then who's persuadable. And then we have to persuade those who are on the fence. And in the process of talking to all those people, try and figure out what we need to do together to move America forward. And I think, you know, what we saw in this election is we saw the people vote against the elite establishment in both parties in many ways. And the outcome was that Trump is good, the president-elect, right, of our country. And so I think that, you know, if we look at this as, you know, we really are actually seeing a new formation of the people versus the 1% and the really big corporations, right, who are, you know, trying to take control of our government, then we see really different realignments and that we have to have super different, you know, assumptions about who people in the Bay Area are going to vote for, right? We can't take anything for granted because we need to start this conversation.
And a lot of people who voted for Obama voted for Trump. A lot of union members voted for Trump. And I just want to play a clip. Bernie Sanders was at a town hall in Kenosha, Wisconsin recently, hosted by MSNBC's Chris Hayes. And there were a lot of Trump voters at this town hall. This area flipped for Donald Trump and helped him win Wisconsin. Kenosha went for Trump by 237 votes. Bernie Sanders was on stage surrounded by Donald Trump voters, including Democrats and union members. And here's a clip from that town hall.
Who's paying for this? Right? Who's paying for the Medicaid? Who's paying for the Social Security? Who's paying for the Medicare? Who?
We are.
Thank you. We are.
We are.
Now, have any of you seen down on streets that it seems as though we have become the silent minority and not the majority?
What do you mean by that?
How much have we been listened to, really?
But who's the we when you say this? You mean
us people.
Who people?
The people who need the Medicare, the people who need the Social Security, who needs the help with the education.
Okay, but now here's good point. Let's see if we can go forward on this. I'm assuming that you believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that we should not cut Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. Is that correct or not?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe it shouldn't be cut.
Okay. Do you know who is now working very hard to try to do that? Republicans in Congress have a plan under the guise of saving Medicare and saving Social Security, making devastating cuts. That's what Republicans are now trying to do. The other point that you made, which is a very, I think you made it, or you both of you have made it actually, is who's going to pay for this stuff? And that is a very fair point. What all of us should know is that over the last 25 years, there has been a massive transfer of wealth in this country from you to the top one-tenth of 1%. In other words, the middle class has shrunk and trillions of dollars have gone to the top one-tenth of 1%. Do you think it's inappropriate to ask those people to stop paying their fair share of taxes so we can adequately fund Medicaid and making public colleges and universities tuition free? Is that an unfair thing to ask?
I don't think it's an unfair thing to ask. The 1%ers, they got rich off us.
That's right.
So it's time they put back.
Okay. All right.
And that is a clip from a town hall with Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump voters in Kenosha, Wisconsin. That woman you heard there who said, who's paying for the Medicaid? Who's paying for the Social Security? They're not listening to us. They got rich off of us. She voted for Donald Trump. Now, some of the people on stage were Democrats and union members. I just thought this town hall just spoke volumes about where we are right now.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you played that clip, because we really actually, you know, people actually do want to engage on the issues, yeah. Right? And when Chris Hayes was asking who is the we, I think he was trying to sort of set things up based on, you know, who's to blame, you know what I mean, and how we're divided, and focused on how we're divided. But we really need to have a conversation about how we're all connected, right? And where are the real problems? You know, what are the causes of the real problems that we're facing, and how do we solve them together? And one of the things, and I think, you know, this is a San Francisco Bay Area angle on this, is that one of the most amazing things about how the campaign was structured is that we had all these amazing nurses that were part of the Bernie Sanders campaign, and I think this often got ignored in the media narrative around the Bernie Bros, and the National Nurses United, which is actually headquartered in Oakland, California, and you have all these amazing women who really see every day the problems, right, that we face, from sickness that comes from climate pollution, from people that actually don't seek treatment because they can't afford their insurance, to people that are so stressed out by unemployment that it's causing health effects. And the way that nurses address the whole person, right, mm-hmm. through their practice, but also when they get involved in talking to voters, and they spend a lot of time volunteering on the campaign and going around in buses, and we see this in California politics, and we saw this nationally in this election. And the way that nurses talk to voters is the same way that Bernie talks to voters, right? Which is treating them as real human beings who often are hurting, right? And trying to come together to a common understanding of what the problem is, and then what the solution is. And so I think that as we listen to that clip and we think about what we want our politics to be like going forward, we need to be looking not just to individuals like Bernie Sanders who are fighting on a national level, but who are the people in our lives who can talk to everyone, include everyone in the solution instead of trying to divide us. And I think nurses provide this amazing example of the way forward, and we're so lucky to have them as a force. And so when we talk about union members too, we want to be sure that it was some unions, you know what I mean, who had solidarity around the people in a really real and deep way. And I think the nurses really model a way forward for us that we can all learn a lot from.
The other thing that struck me from that town hall is that a lot of the people who voted for Trump said it would have either been Bernie or Trump that they would have voted for. So what have you all learned from the Trump campaign? I mean, the media obviously has a lot to do with this, because Vox did a piece on Obamacare and interviewed a lot of Trump voters who had no idea that Trump wants to repeal Obamacare.
Yeah, I mean,
and they regret their votes now.
Yeah. I mean, I experienced that too on talking to people on the campaign trail, and you know, you'd meet people. I remember in Iowa being served in a diner by a waitress who was talking about she was trying to decide who to vote for, and she was trying to decide between Bernie and Trump. And the story that she told, and I heard this again and again, not soliciting it, that this is just what people kept telling me, is that, you know, I am forced to pay into Obamacare, but my deductible is so high I can't go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And so I still don't have health care, right? They experience it as, I don't have health care. And it's really painful, right, to find out that, like, it's not radical that we think people in our country should get to go to the hospital when they're sick, right? I mean, it's so sad mm-hmm. that this is the state of the daily state of affairs, and that people face personal bankruptcy and lose their house if they get their member of their family the medical care that they really need. And so I think people just wanted change, and the Democratic establishment just did not you know, reflect to the American people that they understood that we haven't solved our healthcare problems, right? And so what we saw instead was people, you know, voting for change, which I think they will, you know, people are waking up and coming to regret, but they didn't feel like they had a real, in the general election, I think a lot of people didn't feel like they had an alternative. Right. And they rolled the dice on any kind of change. And in fact, it's going to be the wrong kind of change.
We have a number of emails from listeners who say, is Bernie undermining his revolution by trying to reform a Democratic Party that's wedded to Wall Street?
Well, you know, here's the thing, is it's not his revolution, right? It's your revolution. And so, you know, Bernie could not have done anything that he did without the support of millions of people. And I think that That Bernie's trying to get Wall Street money out of the party, and he's trying to get the party to focus more on low-dollar fundraising and organizing. And I think that's important because parties control a lot of things, and parties do a lot of good things too. And so I think that that's an appropriate and important thing to do. It's not the only thing he's doing, right? Whether you feel like you have to rebuild the Democratic Party, that's up to you. Whether you want to organize a third party, whether you want to run for office, whether you feel like the most important thing is to organize around social justice issues, whether you're involved in Black Lives Matter or whether you're involved in the Sanctuary City movement, I think it's just that we all have to get involved right now, both to protect those who are at risk, and people are really at risk, our neighbors are at risk, physically at risk, families are at risk, but also we have to change our system. And I think people have to try everything, and then we'll see what emerges as the right thing. But I think what we can't do is stay home because we don't like the Democratic Party.
Hmm. It's overwhelming to hear we have to do everything, and I've heard that from a lot of organizers. Anne writes in, I have limited energy and time. I want to put my energy into something. There are so many organizations that are active. What is the most effective for limited time and energy, would you say?
You know, that's a really good question. Part of it has to do with what you care the most about. I mean, I think the things that are going to be successful are the things that actually involve not just giving your dollars, but actually involving people. So I think that whether it's a neighborhood group or it's a national organization that's bringing volunteers in to actually build something new, I think that there's a lot of amazing things that are happening from groups like Color of Change are taking on district attorneys that won't prosecute cops for killing black people. We have Latino groups like Mi Gente, which is getting, which is really involved in setting up not just sanctuary cities, but sanctuary homes and starting to canvass. And then we have people that are going to be running to become delegates in the California Democratic Party and try and change things here. So that's a really sort of personal decision. But you have to look at, do they value your contribution more than just your dollar? And can you be involved in a way that's actually going to help us win something that's a win, not just something that we call a win in order to make progress.
Right. What about resisting Donald Trump?
Well, I think that's something that we all have to do, is that we all have to oppose the abuses of this administration everywhere we can. We can't normalize it. I think we have to assume that Donald Trump will be reelected, because that's what usually happens when people are elected president. It's rare that they're not reelected. And so it's going to depend on us to do extraordinary things to resist him at every level and make sure that we talk to all of the voters to understand what they want in 2020 and make sure that they understand a different version of events than they might be hearing from the Trump administration or the mainstream media.
Becky Bond is a veteran organizer and former senior advisor to Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. She is co-author of the new book with Zach Exley called Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. Becky, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. On tomorrow's Your Call, we will have a conversation about food waste. 32% of globally produced food goes lost, uneaten, or wasted. At the same time, poverty and hunger kill 21,000 people every single day. A number of organizations are tackling this problem with serious results. So what can we do to prevent food waste? Your Call is produced at KALW. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihei Razazan is senior producer. And Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.